Can you hear me now? Okay. I can't hear you for some reason.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Oh, it's because I had myself muted.
Don't forget to unmute yourself, Mike. We've only been at this for like 2 years now.
Yeah. Welcome to Death Watch, the Star Wars podcast from a galaxy not so far, far away. I'm Mike Bennett.
And I'm Chris Skull.
And today, we'll be discussing the series premiere of The Book of Boba Fett, Chapter 1, A Stranger in a Strange Land. Chris, I just think at the top, we should just go over initial reactions to, I guess, what we should call the show, because it's the only thing we have of it. We got so little from trailers and teasers and anything like that, so there were like no expectations for this, which I think ended up playing into their favor. This episode was great to me. I think the series is off to a great start on a nice trajectory. We had a lot of questions that we were talking about last week on what this show could be about. But I think overall, it was a great episode. Really well done. Great music, great acting, great lines, great scenes. Just, you know, it checked all the boxes.
I agree. I loved it. And I love the feel of it. We have to remember that this is not going to be the Mandalorian 3.0, 2.0, whatever. Either way, it's a similar
season
format.
Season 2.5.
Season 2.5. This is not a, you know, it's, I would say it's less piggybacking off of the Mandalorian. I already get a feel that it's going to be its own independent thing. But it, you know, obviously there will be some parallels. Probably there will be some parallels towards the tail end of it. But I get this feeling that it's going to be this standalone part of the franchise, and I'm all for it. I loved it. I love the way that the scenes were laid out. I love the action. It's a nice balance between action, dialogue, and getting a new perspective on Boba Fett. You know, he's a character that we haven't really seen visually a lot of outside of you know, Empire and Return of the Jedi, and the fact that we get to literally and metaphorically see under the helmet is great for me.
Yeah, it's great. So the episode starts out with a pretty awesome scene. This like cold open, it's like the flashback to Tank was a great plot device.
Back in to terms the future.
Of yeah, just being able to throw a bunch of stuff at us real quick without having to like explain it all. It's like he's in a dream. He's in this back to Tank. We're like, okay, we get what that means. We've seen it happen before in Star Wars. He's got the oxygen mask. They're zoomed in on this like tank. This is the first time I've seen this type of back to tank, like in the Empire Strikes Back. Luke is in a vertical like glass tube. When Vader is in one, it's a similar glass tube. When Finn is in probably Bacta something or other, he's on a bed, but he's like wearing Ziploc bags full
he's
of Bacta.
He's wearing the diaper suit.
Yeah. This is like a tanning bed full of the Bacta fluid. But yeah, it worked great for the, like the dream like nature of it, of the scene. He's laying down like as if he's on a bed, and he drifts off into these like dream sequences. You get a flashback of Kamino, the rough waves and stormy nature of that planet. It's very quick. Then it goes to Geonosis with Boba as a boy. And I will not let this go until I see Mace Windu's dead body. But this, I hope, is a little symbol for, hey, by the way, remember, his head got cut off by Mace Windu, and Boba hates him for that. So he's going to come back in this series.
If you don't know now or haven't heard before, this podcast is a pro Mace Windu Lives conspiracy theory thread.
We're Windu Lives it. Apologists. We defend it significantly. Chris and I were talking about it early in the week. I went back and looked at Revenge of the Sith when, spoiler alert, Mace Windu gets his arm cut off and thrown out the window.
No.
The Windu window. he gets thrown out the Windu window. But just before it, when Anakin cuts his hand off, the lightsaber, his lightsaber falls out the window down to where he would have fallen once he gets thrown out, so that he can still have his purple lightsaber. Like, why would you do that scene? It's a 1 second clip where he gets his hand cut off and you see it bounce down the edge of the Senate building.
You
he was only there to keep the lightsaber in his possession.
I have this image of you with Charlie Day's character. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where he's like
in front of
the wall with all the notes and all the red strings.
My whole office here has to just be pinups of all of these things. That's what I'm turning into. But
Mace Windu lives. Okay, so I think these flashbacks are pretty important because it also ties into what we talked about the last episode, is how were they going to explain the Sarlacc pit thing, you know, how he escaped.
Yeah.
And I think without going to too much detail, I think the direction was, it doesn't matter the specifics. All we all know is that he just got out.
Yeah.
And we want to focus on what he does afterward. So I'm okay that they didn't focus on the minutia, but they did, you know, give a plausible, you know, he awoke, he's in Sarlacc goop, he fights his way out, and then he escapes. And then we get to see what happens after, or at least some of what happens after he escapes.
Yeah, I will say they gave a plausible way for him to get out, which, you know, I totally buy it. I think there's no reason why he couldn't have made his way out in the way that he did. But they gave him oxygen by dropping in a stormtrooper in the Sarlacc pit. And I have no idea how a stormtrooper got in there. Because
you know how big the desert? I mean, Tatooine is one big desert. Like, statistically speaking, what poor stormtrooper slipped and fell into this specific Sarlacc pit only to just be a plot device for Boba Fett to escape
the
same Sarlacc pit?
Just trying to think of the only reason a stormtrooper would be out here in the middle of the desert would have been looking for C-3PO and R2-D2 from A New Hope. Because otherwise, when they're on this planet, they're either in the cities managing the spaceport and people coming in and out, or, like, I guess they went out to see Luke's Luke's ranch house and barbecued Owen and Aunt Beru, but
extra crispy Aunt Beru.
Yeah. But I don't know, man. It just there's a stormtrooper in there, and then another thing that I did not understand, he rips out like an oxygen line and plugs it into his own helmet to take a deep breath, because I'm sure it's toxic in there. But I didn't know stormtrooper armor had oxygen. Is that something that you were aware of?
No, I wasn't, but it kind of makes all the most sense. Like, think about it. They have their helmets on all the time. At the very least, they have to have some sort of air conditioning in their helmets.
I guess, but it was like a pressurized line. Like, he pulls it out and you see it, you know, something's flowing out and he plugs it into his own. I don't know. Doesn't Finn talk about his own suit? And
clue that I have is in Force Awakens, Finn's talking about how the helmets and the stormtroopers, the First Order stormtroopers, have they can filter out certain things, but they can't filter out poisonous gases.
Yeah,
and that's when he and Rey concoct that plan. So that's the only indicator that I can think of. I'm sure if we went into the Star Wars Encyclopedia or Wikipedia diagrams, they'll conveniently say that they have a running oxygen line to their helmets. But whatever, plot device.
It's great. And then I love that they, kind of closed the loop on how Cobb Vanth got his armor from the Jawas, that they just kind of swoop in, rip it off of his body. And he's like, as he's coming to, they hit him in the head with the butt of their rifle.
Savage.
I totally think these Jawas are dead at some point in this series. He swings back by and blows up their crawler or sets them on fire or something. These Jawas,
or those are the same. Those have to be different Jawas. I was thinking the ones that Din Djarin meets on his way to get the egg or whatever, but that's on a completely different.
Oh yeah, planet. Different planet. No, these guys are done. They signed their death warrant when they smacked them in the head. And then the Tusken Raiders, save him in quotes. They chain him up in a rope and drag him behind their Banthas for miles and miles. Of course, staying in single file line, so nobody can find out how many of them are. But this is interesting because I think it it starts to link back to why when Boba Fett shows up in The Mandalorian, he has a gaffy stick and seems to be good at fighting with it. And he's got like these different robes that seem to be more Tusken culturally appropriate, that this is how he at least got connected with them in some way. And we see more through the episode of how that goes. So a great, you know, flashback intro to the series. They're like, boom, boom, boom. Here's what happened to Boba Fett after the Return of the Jedi. There's clearly more, but you know, here's what you need to know to get up and running. And then it cuts to the opening credits, which I did think was interesting. It does still look like The Mandalorian in terms of the font and the color, and it's they're obviously
well, the color is slightly different. The color has like a green tint to it.
Yeah, that's true.
And you know, because of course Boba, his theme is green. But what I noticed though is that the titling of the episode, it was, they're already off to a completely different start. It's no longer like in the definitive article, the child, the Mandalorian, the prisoner. It's more like stranger in a strange land. And I'm thinking, I didn't look this up, but I feel like it's like a lyric to a song. And if I hope that they go into like that kind of a theme where it's like old classic rock songs are going to be what they name each of these episodes. I think that'd be pretty interesting. But either way, you can already see that there's like a deviation to that, to the model that we saw in The Mandalorian.
Yeah, I just Googled it real quickly while you were talking. There's a science fiction book called A Stranger in a Strange Land, where it looks like some guy is raised on Mars by Martians. So I just definitely has that like, you know, sci-fi type like word picture in a phrase type deal, which is more poetic than just like the traveler, the Mandalorian, whatever. So the rescue. So you're right. Interesting beginning of the deviation. And I'm loving the music in this. I forgot to look up who
it's the is same guy
composing. Is it?
Okay. Ludwig Göransson. Yeah. It's the same. I'm convinced that this guy, it's the same composer who's done the Mandalorian soundtrack. Yeah. I'm convinced he's the new John Williams. And I think he actually worked with John Williams briefly. So, you know, as a consultant when he was coming up with the score for The Mandalorian. There's deviations to his themes.
Yeah.
But in the music and even in the title card, they're setting this show apart from being The Mandalorian and being its own standalone, you know, work. And I appreciate that those details are what's coming out to make it unique.
Yeah. It's great. Even just the sort of the non consequential music that just fills in scenes in the background is great as well, as it was in The Mandalorian too. So, very good so far. And then, you know, they continue with the flashback after the credits. Once, you know, I'm so used to that. Once Boba is back with the Tuskens, they continue to show how he is around them. And I love this, like, so he's like tied up to a tree stump, or I guess it's not really a tree stump. I don't know where they get this wood from, right? Like, it's a large, for a planet that doesn't have a forest on it, it's a large piece of wood looking material. It's all like, you know, pocked full of holes, as if there's like termites out there too. But where do termites come from on a desert planet? Plot hole. But we're gonna have to do a whole nother series to show the Tatooine from a million years ago when there used to be a forest here. And that's a long rabbit trail we don't need to go down. So, but he's like tied up. There's this other Rodian prisoner there. He's getting like beat up by these kid bullies, like Tusken Raider kids.
It's bad enough that he survived the Sarlacc pit. It's bad enough that he survived walking days in the blaring desert sun, and it's bad enough that he's a prisoner. Now he gets poked and prodded by a bunch of kids. Like, that's probably just adds insult to injury.
Yeah, the end of his life is about to be death from exposure to the sun and being kicked by 10-year-olds. But he still manages this, like, this posture of honor, even in the way when he's like, when he can't do anything and he's like bound by the hands and he's getting beat, he like makes eye contact with the chieftain who's kind of off watching the kids do it to him. He's like, the chieftain is noticing that Boba's not like trying to kick these kids or do something to like defend himself against them. He's like, these are kids and I'm not going to injure them. Like it, yeah. It just like, he's getting the crap beat out of him and he's still being honorable.
Yeah, he still has a sense of code. Like, he'll take out whoever he needs to take out, but it seems to me like children are just not on the list.
Yeah. Reminds me a lot of Ahsoka, too, in the way that, particularly at the end of the Clone Wars finale, when she's, you know, amidst the Order 66 chaos, she's still not killing the clone troopers who are all trying to kill her. So even when the odds are turned against you, still maintaining your code is a very challenging thing.
Yeah.
What was interesting about this group of kids, there's particularly one the camera kind of centers on that he makes eye contact with and then shows up in, later scenes, is played by Jimmy Kimmel's nephew. It is definitely Jimmy Kimmel's nephew. It's okay. Interesting that there's this famous connection to this. He's obviously the late night talk show host, Jimmy Kimmel, host of the Man Show, I should say. For those of you,
wow, you just dated yourself, man.
That it is hilarious to me that someone who is like more like. Representative of like the woke liberal media used to host the Man Show at some point in his career. Before
that was quite the 180.
Yeah, Adam Carolla did not make that transition when
he didn't.
The show. But it is interesting to see that like connection, and the kid plays the role really well. I mean, we see any of those roles in Star Wars where it's a faceless role, and even a non-spoken role. The people like Brendan Wayne, who plays the Mandalorian like character under the armor, or I'm blanking on the guy who plays David Prowse, I think, who played Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. Those are like, they're all physical acting, and there's no like verbal communication in their performance per se, but it really sells the quality of the role. So that was cool. See yeah. that.
I like to think that Jimmy Kimmel's nephew wasn't actually given a lot of direction. Maybe some direction, because if he had the mask on, it was hard for him to see. So they probably explained to him what his cues are, like walk here to there, walk in this at this speed. But everything else, when he's hitting Temuera Morrison with the stick, that's actually just him being himself. Like, I want to imagine that Jimmy Kimmel's nephew is actually just a punk in real life. And he's like, bro, just have fun with it. Just take the stick and then just beat the crap out of Temuera Morrison and just have fun with it.
Yeah. Well, and then even later at night, when he like gets away, he's able to get himself out of the rope, or at least get some loose slack on the rope. And those, I forget the name of their creatures. They're like dog-like animals.
Mastiffs.
Yeah. The Mastiff. Comes at him, and he is able to grab him with the rope, cut off his oxygen flow enough to like make him pass out, but he doesn't even kill that animal. Like, the amount that he went to be non-lethal in addressing them is incredible to me. Of all things, even like anyway, so he lets him go. He uses his tooth to like cut the rope. He offers to free the Rodian, again another like honorable thing. But the Rodian, you know, he raises the alarm for whatever dumb reason.
What a jerk.
Yeah. And it calls over a couple of Tusken warriors who chase down Boba, catch him quickly because he's, you know, not super energetic at this point, sitting in the sun all day. But even still, then he manages to have like an honorable type fight, like taking a stance and trying to use that one little kid gaffy stick that he took from Jimmy Kimmel's nephew to fight with this like one warrior is great. And even the control of that they have over those mastiffs, like the chieftain like just kind of pounds his staff on the ground and he pauses and then comes and stands behind him. He's a really well-trained animal.
I mean, we saw that in The Mandalorian, the one episode where he's engaging with, you know, he's with Cobb Vanth and he's engaging with the Tusken warriors. The way that even like almost, well, they were nonverbal, maybe not verbal in the sense that we can understand what they were saying, but the animals are domesticated enough so that they know when to attack and they know when to stop.
Yeah.
And you saw that relationship in that episode. So it's interesting how you can see them domesticate them in like in just very much like real like attack dogs.
Yeah.
How we know them. So by the way, it's Mastiff is a real dog. Mastiff is the animal. And I feel like that's just lazy writing.
Mm. Yeah. That's a good point.
Whatever.
Well,
whatever. That's just my observation.
Forget it then. Let's just give up on this whole show.
It's garbage.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode.
So, that's it for the scene. Boba gets captured, whatever. They move on. He gets tied back up probably, we assume. When we find out later, yeah, he did. But the scene ends because Fennec wakes him up. And I realized last week I said Shenick Fan instead of Fennec Shand. And even writing out my notes for this episode, I kept writing Shenick. So I apologize retroactively and proactively because it's going to happen again where I'm going to say it backwards. But Fennec wakes up Boba.
You mean Shenick?
No. You saw me pause. I had to think. No, he's just messing with me. I had to literally look at it on the page and read it. Fennec. She wakes him up because there's a long line of visitors here to pay their respects. And this whole sequence is really cool too, because we go back into the familiar palace. There's got to be a word for this.
The throne room, I guess.
Throne room, yeah. It's where we ended with the Mandalorian, you know, on Boba, but now he's back in the room holding court, essentially, with all of the people who are coming to now pay their respects for the new ruler of this enclave. And there's a couple of callbacks or little like Easter eggs here. The first alien, I don't remember what his species is. I think he's
I forget what they call it, Aquilar or something like that.
Yeah. He doesn't speak basic, and neither Fennec or Boba really speak what his language is. So he talks to them for, I mean, we see him talking for 30 seconds, and he could have been talking before that. And they're like, what did he say? I don't know. I think you said friendship, but he gives them money as a tribute, which is like, you know, paying off your local gangster for their protection / if you don't pay, you're going to be murdered anyway.
Seems fair.
So yeah, so he gives him the tribute, walks away, and he makes this comment, we're gonna need a protocol droid. And then their protocol droid speaks. So like, what is that droid, and why can't he, why does he not speak any other languages besides a shaky galactic basic? Really missed opportunity there for that guy. That droid is played by Matt Berry. I'm kind of unfamiliar with his work, but he's in the IT Crowd, which is a fairly popular nerd show. And the droid's name is UK2-B. Doesn't quite flow off the tongue like some of the other droids in the universe, but
he needs a nickname there real quick.
He has a different, like, you know, he's a different looking bipedal droid in terms of like, he's not like the typical C-3PO
protocol
droid.
I've seen those droids before. I forget which scene. I think it was in Return of the Jedi where 3PO and R2 they get captured by the Jawas or they're in the part of Jabba's palace that has like all the scrap droids. They look like they're about to get scrapped. There's this one droid who's like constantly moving back and forth, pulling the lever like an animatronic that's controlling the blast furnace that scraps the droid. If you go to Galaxy's Edge and you went to Ronto's Roaster, that's the droid that's the animatronic that's moving back and forth, that's like controlling the pod racer engine that's cooking the meat.
Yeah.
So I feel like I think when he says protocol droid, they need something with a better processor, like a 3PO type droid, versus all he can do is just hold things and speak, and then
that's like at least an Intel i7.
Yeah, that like a protocol droid.
They're working with like a Pentium 3 at this point. They need something a little faster.
Yeah, exactly. Like that droid's still running Windows 2000.
Yeah. Then a Trandoshan comes in. We've seen this like alien species a lot. They're like kind of reptilian. They were most recently in The Mandalorian. They attack Mando when he's like on his way back in chapter 2 with the child to head back to his ship. Bosk the bounty hunter is a famous Trandoshan, and they show up a lot of other times. I wasn't super impressed by the costume here. We've never really had a spoken Trandoshan real life character or a live action character, but the way that the eyes and the mouth are moving looked kind of like a bad animatronic like at Disney or something.
I mean, you gotta give him some credit. It was only there for like 30 seconds.
I know. That's the thing about the world these days. You can't be satisfied. But Boba does give that funny line. He's like, even when a Trandoshan pays you a compliment, it still feels like a threat. but that was that was cool. And then my favorite part of this scene, the Twi'lek who comes in, he's introduced by the droid as the mayor, and then he quickly clarifies. He's like, no, I'm just like the assistant to the regional manager of the mayor. This guy's played by David Pascarelli.
He's the Dwight Schrute of Tatooine. Is that what you're telling me?
Except he is like a douchebag, he's played by David Pascarelli, who's like the ex-husband of Julia Louis-Dreyfus in Veep. I've seen him before in Madam Secretary. He plays like the Italian prime minister, and he's like every role he's ever been in, he's like just this really douchey bro. And every line he's like, oh yeah, you know, I could see how you would have understood that like that. Okay. About the tribute. Actually, our tribute is just our sincere heartfelt gratitude.
Apologies.
Yeah. And by the way, do you have our tribute?
Yeah.
Okay. No. All right. Well, I will leave. And he keeps doing this physical gesture.
Yeah.
Like you're bowing to royalty, but in a way that's like, I don't respect you at all.
I think he's like feigning respect as opposed to actually.
Exactly.
And then he goes in and he has this like little jab at the end. He's like, oh, well, don't be surprised if I show up with like, he calls it another delegation. But like, we go from a Trandoshan who's paying a tribute and sort of sounding like a threat to this Twi'lek who's actually making it a threat, but making it sound like a tribute. And it's like, oh, well, don't be surprised if I show up with another posse of people.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
It was really good. It's another like a little look into the politics of Star Wars, you know, the mayor of the town, which, you know, they also, when the droid introduced him, he says the mayor of Mos Espa, which I guess is the town next to Jabba's palace and where he, you know, most of the connections to a town come from. Mos Espa is not something we really like spent any time on within the Star Wars universe, certainly not in movies.
Mos Eisley is where we came up and, where we've worked with before, but Mos Espa
and Anchorhead.
Like, yeah.
And Mos Pelgo is where Mando was with, you know, finding Cobb Vanth. So this is another city. But it'll just be interesting to see. That's definitely a storyline that's going to continue, that the local government is not paying the respect to Boba that they did, at least to Jabba.
That should be interesting. So,
and then the final, you know, audience that he sees here are these two Gamorreans who get brought in. And I really hope for just, you know, Easter egg sake that these are the two Gamorreans that Luke like force chokes when he walks in the Return of the Jedi to save Han, Leia, and Chewie. He opens the gate. He walks in and two of them kind of come from the side and he like kind of force chokes them.
it would be really cool if these are just the two guys.
I think they are. I mean, the droid.
They've got to be. Like, there's no reason why.
Yeah, the droid does confirm that they worked, even if they weren't those specific ones, but that they worked for Jabba, and then they worked for Bib Fortuna. So the timeline is there.
And yeah, you for see, sure.
So, you know, I think that they are.
And they're brought to him as like, I don't quite understand why they were saying you should sacrifice them, but they're like, here are these two guards. They defended your previous leadership very, very well. Why don't you murder them? I'm like, okay.
That just seems ineffective.
And then Boba's like, are you going to take care of me? And they're like, and they just kneel down before him. And they're like, okay, you're good to go. And again, Fennec's like, I don't think that was a good idea, but whatever. Boba takes them on. And that's that. So they're getting ready to go to their next, they're going to take a field trip to kind of bust some decaps. But before Boba and Fennec head out on the field trip, why don't we take a quick break and we'll give you a chance to hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
This episode of Death Watch is brought to you by Skull Square Design Company. If you're a fan of Boba Fett, The Mandalorian, and the Star Wars universe as a whole, be sure to check out our shop for some great gifts for you and your family. Whether you're perusing the bazaar in Black Spire Outpost, or showing your allegiance to Kylo Ren in the First Order, we have great gifts for you to enjoy. Check out our shop when we reopen January 17th, or find us on Instagram and TikTok at Skull Squared. That's Skull with a C, as in,
see y'all real soon!
And we're back. So we pan out from Jabba's, I guess Boba's palace, we need to rename it, to the city of Mos Espa, which is this really cool, you know, from an architect's standpoint, this city it's set in a canyon, which has grown beyond the extents of the canyon and is now on the plateau above.
There's like these elevators. Yeah. I wondered about that. So you have like these structures going off to the edge of the crater, the canyon, and you have these elevators that go up. And I appreciate how, or almost organically, they try to fill up as much space as possible, but using the natural landscape as opposed to just the wasteland, the rest of Tatooine.
Yep.
Kind of reminds me of... I can't remember the name of the planet, but the one that takes place in Rogue One.
Yeah, Jeddah.
Jeddah. Yeah, exactly. It was very similar.
Like, it's like an exact inverse, because Jeddah is up on a similar shape, but it's up like on a plateau,
right?
Yeah, with like walls around it. But it's like the same exact shape. This is like the inverse of Jeddah, down in a pit. I wonder if there's a metaphor there. I doubt it. But I'm just looking at the screenshot now. It has like the typical Tatooine architecture with like the round buildings and the dome. For those who aren't like architects, this is done because Tatooine is a dusty, sandy planet with wind all the time, and in corners, square buildings would get ripped to shreds over time and they would not weather well. So being rounded buildings, the wind kind of moves around them and there's minimal sand damage. So it is kind of cool that that like literal, like something that would actually happen on this, on a desert planet, gets worked out in the, you know, the architecture of a lot of the buildings. So that's cool. And there's like that tall tower in the middle. I'm really, that's got to be like a thing.
Probably where the mayor is.
Yeah.
Can't be. It's just not some random tall building that's used for, I don't know, public utilities. It seems to be like a very important spire for very important people.
Yeah. It's got to be a future scene, for sure. So that'll be cool. I liked the street level scenes too. I'm sure there's Easter eggs that we can't even see, and people walking by or the things up on the wall. But I did love the spot robots, the four-legged like Boston Dynamics robots.
Right. I thought that was an interesting addition to the
Star Wars. They just added the little wings to the back to make it look like not the Boston Dynamics robot.
They just took four of those robots from Boston Dynamics and just add some wings on it and make it Star Wars.
Yeah. It was pretty cool to see, just, you know, it's something different but familiar to at least our real world area. And then, you know, they're walking. There's this conversation between him and Fennec, like, you shouldn't be here walking around. You should be on a litter, which I'm unfamiliar with that term. I assume it's the, like, the thing that you carry with between, like, on somebody's shoulders, right. And it's a little carriage.
I didn't know that that's what that was called. I just assumed they were talking about cat poop somewhere. Like, why do we need to talk about, or like a litter of, I guess it makes sense, you know, like a litter of puppies.
Maybe.
Not to be confused with a liter of puppies.
Yeah, a liter of cola.
Liquid measurement. That's just weird. But yeah.
Yeah. He's like, look, I'm not a useless noble. And it's just this constant theme of Fennec's like, you need to be more like Jabba. And he's like, I'm not going to do it like Jabba. I'm doing it my own way. And that kind of just keeps coming out in more and more ways. But they end up going to a bar, cantina type place. And mm-hmm. I loved the music is the like the Mos Eisley cantina theme, but played in a different way. I'm not musical enough to have the right terminology, but you can hear
the variation. Yeah. If you watch the episode with the subtitles on, it says cantina theme variation.
Oh,
I love it.
That's great.
I love it. It's like a bossa
with subtitles this time.
You should. I recommend it. It's like a bossa nova or like salsa variation. I'm like, I think I just found my new favorite song in Star Wars.
Yeah. You got like the cantina alien. I don't even know what their species are that normally they play like the whatever the whole complement of, but they're playing like the guitar, but like in Spanish guitar style, like traditional Spanish guitar.
The species is a bith.
Oh yeah.
And Max Rebo is the blue teddy bear looking thing.
Yeah.
That he's, I'm pretty sure it's the same character, Max Rebo, because he used to also play for Jabba. And
the Return of the Jedi in that
right
scene.
Yeah,
okay.
So Max Rebo and I guess his lead bith guitarist, but if he's playing flamenco, this makes me think that there's like a sort of a Spanish variation. You know how there's somehow there's accents in Star Wars that mimic our own. So instead of a bith, he's more like a bith.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
he speaks with a little lisp.
Is it BIS and it's just pronounced bith?
It's bith.
San Francisco. It's a bith.
Yeah, yes, Francisco de Bith.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So they wrap up the scene. Boba talks to the woman who runs the establishment. Again, she's like, oh, I didn't know you were the guy running the ship. I didn't see your litter. He's like, yeah, I walk on my own 2 feet. Like, I don't need somebody to carry me around. I'm more capable than anyone before me. That's the kind of like subtext. But that interaction seems to go well. He's like, look, I'm here to just make sure your business keeps thriving. So let's keep going. Well, they hand them their helmets at the door to like clean them up, which is kind of weird. I didn't quite get it, but whatever. And the line about, oh, do you need us to hose down your Gamorreans and feed them? like they look like pigs, but like treating them like pigs. Like, do you want us to hose them down and you know, give them
and I love how Boba went along with it. Like, no, not today, but thank you.
Yeah.
No, we're good.
Yeah. That was just a hilarious little throwaway line. But that interaction ends. They head out in the street, and even Fennec is still kind of pushing her agenda. She's like, you know, you should rule with fear. He's like, in unsteady times, fear is a sure bet. And you know, it just keeps going on. And then like immediately after this line, a bunch of they looked like the gray fighter dudes from Power Rangers.
the putty patrol
who like just kind of like crawl out of the shadow like and do their like acrobatic like flips and then they go to fight them. They surround them and then they pull out the shields that are from Halo and they hold them and then they have their like shock sticks.
They kind of go like Roman phalanx.
Yeah, even in the concept art at the end, they show what the scene was originally conceptualized as, like that the shields made like a literal wall around them. There weren't even like the openings, but I thought this whole like choreograph was pretty awesome. The fight was not so one-sided that it was like, oh, Boba just comes out and starts like, you know, beating them to pieces. He does take his arm rocket. His
punches.
And it blows shocks, up on the shield, but it like knocks him to the ground, not the guys. And he does get hit and shocked, and so does Fennec. But eventually, the the Gamorreans are done getting hosed down, and then they come over and they kind of redistribute the you know, the fairness of the fight, and
right,
it allows an opening for Boba to grab a shock stick and you know, push forward. Eventually they take out most of them when the fight breaks up, and the one guy runs, he climbs up the wall, and he just, like, again, another arm rocket just blows him off the side of the building.
What's a little collateral damage?
Yeah.
You know, no big deal. I wonder if this is the delegation that the mayor's regional assistant deputy, whatever, was talking about.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think that's going to be something that comes up later, is what, who this was and why it happened. But Fennec runs after them in this, like, hardcore parkour scene.
Parkour. Just like,
parkour! Michael, parkour! Parkour!
Extreme!
It's been a while since parkour has been in a movie or a show. You know, it was popular 5-10 years ago or more.
I appreciate the Assassin's Creed approach to this whole sequence.
Yeah, she does the, like, the leap of faith, like, dive over the wall, even as it is definitely Assassin's Creed style. As she runs after them, Boba's like, I want them alive. And so she chases them down. She kills one of them and captures one. And as that's happening, he has the Gamorreans take him back to the back to tank. So he's clearly, like, not 100%.
Yeah.
Because we've seen him get pretty messed up over the last 20 minutes of the episode, from the flashbacks to now. So we cut back to the palace. The Gamorreans are dragging him in his room. They kind of take off his armor and dunk him in the tank. And then immediately another flashback to happens, and he's back on Tatooine. Now he's being, like, walked by Jimmy Kimmel's nephew, taken for a walk. I was kind of unsure of what was happening at that point. They make him go and dig in the desert for those, like, water fruits, and I forget what they are actually called, but I had no idea that those things, like, were just findable in the sand.
They're like reverse cactuses.
Yeah.
Or underground cactus pods. Right.
They're potato cactuses, cactus potatoes.
Cactus potatoes.
They grow underground.
Water potatoes?
Yeah. Well, cactus in that they hold on to water in a cavity.
Right. But they're like more like water gourds.
Mm. Okay.
Okay. That's what we're coining it, water gourds.
So Boba becomes a farmer, apparently, or a gardener, and he's digging with this Rodian, who gets super excited each time he finds one of them, but then immediately hands it to the guy. Like, he clearly has, what's that, like, syndrome where you...
Stockholm syndrome,
where you start to just, like, be on the side of the people who are keeping you captive.
Yeah.
Definitely is like, oh, I found it. Look, here you go, boss. Like, you can take it, even though he's dying of thirst. What was unexpected in this part is that they keep digging. The Rodian starts to find what looks like skin or flesh of an animal. And at first I'm like, uh-oh, they're going to find the crate dragon or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It starts to look dragon-y type, reptilian skin. And then out pops this six-legged armed, like, beast monster.
Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. The Rodian immediately gets redshirted. For those who are not Star Trek fans, redshirts are the characters in episodes who wore the red topped uniform but had no speaking roles, and they get killed right away.
He was wearing red.
Was he wearing? Oh, I need to look at this now.
I think he was.
No, his skin is kind of reddish, like orangish red, but he's wearing, like, a yellow bottom suit with a brown top. So he's not wearing a red shirt.
Maybe they didn't want to make it too obvious, but, like, I want to think that that's definitely, like, a red shirt reference.
Yeah. It would be awesome if it was. The claws, like, this beast is, like, pretty intense. And, you know, so the Rodian gets destroyed immediately.
It's like part centaur, part centipede, centaurepede.
Yeah, centaurepede. I love it. He, like, yeah, because he can kind of like walk on one leg or on two legs or four legs, or can have two arms or four arms. It's kind of an interesting like mix match. But they, you know, he starts attacking all three of them, kills the Rodian immediately. And then the Tusken boy and Boba end up starting to work together. There's this moment where Boba could clearly have probably like sacrificed the kid and run away himself. He chooses honor over revenge, saving the kid. Like, and they end up working together. The kid slams his gaffy stick in the thing's leg. And then Boba does another desert chain choking scene the same way that Leia jumps on.
I was going to say, Jabba. Like, hey, it worked for Leia, Hutt Slayer, Organa.
Yeah.
It must work for me too.
And I'm just glad that they did not put Temuera Morrison in the like slave underwear outfit.
Oh my God.
And they let him stay in the onesie overalls.
In his tattered space long johns.
Yeah, with his army boots on. But so he gets up there and he literally chokes him with the chain, kills him, and they walk back together with the decapitated head of this sand beast.
Centaurpede.
Yeah, centaurpede. So, you know, this is, again, the whole honor thing over revenge. He walks back to the same village with him. Like, he easily could have probably just run off at that point and let the kid take the thing back. But he comes back and there's this, like, nonverbal, unspoken nod of respect from the chieftain, which is, like, kind of the highest honor you can get in this group, where he's watching the kid be proud and showing the decapitated thing. And then he gives him his little glass of water, or like the little bulb of water, the potato plant, the potato cactus.
Water gourd.
Water gourd. And that's just like, and I think this is another step in the direction of how Boba became a sort of Tusken warrior with the gaffy stick and the robes and stuff that we see later. So that's what is interesting.
I feel like there's a lot of lessons that I took away from this episode, and since this show is going to be primarily about Boba Fett, we don't know if it's going to be like a one season, one and done, or you know, if it opens itself up to be a continuation if it's popular enough, which I think and hope it does. But I feel like there's lessons that you can take away. So I think we should start doing a segment called How to Be a Better Boss Like Boba Fett, where we look into the episodes and we glean how Boba Fett is a better crime boss than Jabba, and then how we can try to apply that into our own lives.
We need like a whole like cut in piece here, like how to be a better boss.
Yes. I'm going to make it happen. Like, the first thing that I had noticed is when they were talking about the Gamorrean guards, he could have gotten rid of them and then hired somebody else, but instead he decided to promote from within, and as opposed to outsourcing new hires. And the reason why this is a good idea is because it shows loyalty and it motivates employees, and motivated employees work harder, especially when it's based on their merit and ethic, which, as we saw, because they had his back during that street fight scene, you know, they came out and they were able to break out the crowd of assassins. Another thing I noticed, and this is a recurring theme, is treating people the way that he wants to be treated, with respect. We saw in this episode that he, even with the people that could be an antagonist, like the regional assistant to the regional manager of Tatooine or Mos Espa, he perceived it as a threat, but he still spoke to him respectfully. So that's something we can take away from there.
Yep, I totally agree.
He leads from the front. You know, he's visible. He's engaging. He puts in the work, obviously. Like he was quoted in the cantina that he walks on his own two feet. But he also has the capacity to see the forest through the trees. You know, he lets his employees, like Fennec, do their job. He equips them to do their job effectively.
Yeah, he's also not afraid to go against the grain. You know, multiple times Fennec is asking him to do it the way it's always been done, and clearly he's trying to create a new type of business lead his business a new way. So
yeah, but he also listens to input, because although, you know, she repeated, you know, to what did she say about the customs or repeating the customs or whatever, he did listen. He didn't apply it at first, but he applied it when they were in the cantina.
Yeah. Well, he also, you know, like, so, like, she kind of raises an objection, like, do you mind if I disagree? And he says, speak your mind. So, like, he's not shutting down.
Speak freely.
Yeah, he's not shutting down his, you know, employees or subordinates' ability to communicate with him.
Exactly. Something that's very appreciative. I love the fact that Boba Fett is also Team Great Resignation, because I think at the beginning of the episode, he says, like, I'm what do you say? Like, I'm transforming myself, or I'm... Basically, he understands the power of the rebrand, so he starts from day one communicating with everybody that was previously involved with his, you know, his competitor and previous employer, but he gets to work very quickly on working on his marketing and rebranding. So that's something I appreciate.
It is great. He should have contacted Palpatine's, the ghost of Palpatine, to help him out with that marketing rebrand.
Yeah, get some uniforms, get the proper
not even
ready.
The ghost of Palpatine. I forgot Palpatine clone, is obviously still alive, duh.
Somehow Palpatine returns.
Yeah. So, Chris, how about some maybe Chapter 2 predictions, or now that we have an idea of what the series is starting to be like, what do you think we're going to see in the coming weeks?
Well, the two things that come to my mind is we're going to see who his competition is, because... Despite, you know, Jabba no longer being around, there's always going to be a power vacuum, and Boba thinks he's a shoo-in, but from what we saw with the engagement of the mayor or the mayor's, you know, footman, that's obviously not going to be the case. So there's going to be definitely a power struggle. So you're probably going to see some crime lord politics, hopefully not like Galactic Senate politics that we saw all three movies of the prequel, but still something along those lines. And two, the Bacta tank is going to be a plot device. You mentioned, you know, it seems that he's not 100%. He keeps having to go back. They're showing him in the Bacta tank for a reason. Something tells me that midway or maybe towards the end, they're going to somehow remove his ability to heal. And then he's going to have to just, we're just going to see raw primal Boba Fett.
Mm.
Or something along those
lines. Yeah, I mean, at the very minimum, they're going to use it to keep bringing in these flashbacktas, because...
Yeah, flashbacktas. I like that.
They have... I mean, there's still time we haven't seen from these first few flashbacks that... so as they kind of fill in the gaps of what has happened, and even perhaps, may I say, as they bring Mace Windu into the series, they need to...
It's not. I love that it's a when and not an if.
They need to bring up... Look, I'd rather be all in on this theory and be the one guy who's right than be like, oh, maybe it's possible, but probably not, and be like pleasantly surprised. That, you know, give an opportunity to flash back to those Mace Windu moments, or even in the Clone Wars animated series, all that stuff. So I think definitely what you said before, they're going to be addressing the attack of the Putty Patrol, and whether that was a local or a foreign entity who was attacking him. I think at some point, we saw a quick preview, he's going to be getting in Slave One and flying around, probably goes off-world to connect with other syndicates. So I think that's some stuff we'll see in our near future. So that's all for this episode. Thank you all for joining us. If you like this episode, please subscribe, share, and write a review on Apple Podcasts.
You can also follow us on Instagram at Death Watch Podcast, on TikTok at Death Watch Cast, and email us at deathwatchpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find our podcast merch on Etsy.com/shop/deathwatchpodcast.
Thanks for listening. This is the way.
This is the way.